I burst into tears this week over my father, the first time in a long time that I'd done that. I thought I was past that stage of grieving. He died over 2 years ago. I was listening to the first reports of a shooting in Texas, a mass shooting rampage with some 13 killed and 30 or more injured. The suspected gunman was a military psychiatrist from Washington, D.C., just being posted to Afghanistan. I made a bunch of assumptions right then and there. I'm not sure yet if they're true. That he had been, as a psychiatrist, hearing too many stories of the war conditions and the war situations, and sure didn't want to go there himself. He had tried already to resign from the army. I'd heard that he was Muslim and assumed that put him in an untenable position. I assumed stories he was hearing were too similar to the ones my father told. Dad was a member of the 287th Field Artillery Observation Battalion for three years during World War II. He loved to tell the stories of landing on Leyte on the Philippines, landing on Okinawa on Easter morning, then surveying around the entire island of Okinawa, coming up to within a foot or an inch, I don't know, the survey was marvelously accurate, he said, of meeting up with his brother Ollie on a Navy Seabee stationed on Okinawa at the same time. That was a bit of a goose chase, as Ollie was looking for him at the same time, but they were successful in the end with pictures in the papers to prove it. Dad treasured his time as an integral member of a tightly knit group. He went to all of their reunions until so few guys were left, and who were left were so old and decrepit they quit holding them. He kept in touch with many of his pals between times, and their wives too, sometimes even after his pal had died. My understanding of what an observation battalion does, that it goes behind the lines and watches the fire and tells them, the artillery, where to aim better. From his reaction to any war movie or news clip with gunfire, I surmise he saw and heard a lot of firefighting. By the time I remember his actions, it would have been 10 years and more after the war. Just hearing the sound would cause him to shake uncontrollably, tears running down his face. Mom would try to comfort him, but only time would ease his reaction. By the time I entered university, such reactions were much lessened. I wonder if there weren't fewer shows on the war as well, being the late 60s by that time. It wasn't like Dad avoided those movies. He loved them. He read whatever he could find about the war, especially in the Pacific. He told his stories to the Smithsonian Institute's Veterans Story Project. He loved it when I taped Canadian shows about our participation in the war and shared them, because he knew very little about the Canadian end of things. And then he would send the video on to his brother in Virginia. During the last days of his life, he told me that very few days went by that he didn't think about the war in some way or another. It was such a pivotal time in his life. The last bit of his story. He walked the 2 to 3 miles home from the train station from the war on his 21st birthday, January 19. That, he maintained, was the best day of his life. I struggle with Remembrance Day myself. As a community band member in Lacombe, Alberta, playing tuba, for the local Remembrance Day service, we played some pretty traditional hymns and then listened to an address by a local minister extolling the virtues of war and soldiers who had fallen and given the ultimate sacrifice. I was so put off by the tone of it all that I quit the band entirely after a few years. I have no problem acknowledging the courage of the individual soldiers, even if they had signed up for they knew not what, too young to really know. Soldiers are asked to do the unthinkable. Not all of the stories my father told are repeatable or defendable. He did what he thought he had to do and knew that it was not his place to say, no, I can't do that. It was war, and awful stuff happens. I had a front row seat over many years to the unintended after effects of participating in war. Dad's Purple Heart medal was for a shrapnel wound. I don't remember if he ever said how long it took to heal. His mental wounds took years. It was called battle fatigue after World War II. After World War I, it was called shell shock. After the American Civil War, they referred to the condition as a soldier's heart. Now we know it as post-traumatic stress disorder. Even now, when treatment is at least theoretically available, it mostly is not. The culture of soldiers makes it difficult to even seek help. So on Remembrance Day, I don't want to glorify war. The soldiers need to hear that their efforts were worthwhile. Others need to know that those they knew who gave their lives, their friends, their family, their loved ones, did make a difference, though, in the history of the world. They need to hear that the war was necessary, and so the sacrifice was worth it. I don't know what the middle ground is. I sure don't want any politicians, none of them, to think that I approve of war as a solution to anything. I am not convinced that going to war in either Iraq or Afghanistan has accomplished anything at all useful. Many innocent civilians have died, as well as soldiers on both sides. Animosity toward the West is no less than it was before. We do not understand their culture, and killing people doesn't help. For me, the ultimate sacrifice is not death, but pride. Lowering one's hubris sufficiently to listen to the other side, speaking only when it's your turn. If only such an ultimate sacrifice was the one made, it would save so many lives, and the world would be a much happier place. So let us, on this Remembrance Day week, bring to mind all those who gave of ourselves, who gave of themselves during war or peacemaking or any other prize, hoping to make the world a better and safer place to live. We'll have a short time of meditation, and then the choir will sing.